Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Nora Vincent. Her new book is Thy Neighbor. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Nora, this is dark.
That's what everyone says. I don't get it. Why?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be funny.
Yeah, where did this come from, Nora?
Well, you know, I thought I was going to take a break after doing nonfiction and putting myself in a hole each time, and then I found that maybe I kind of live a little bit in a hole, so maybe this was letting it out a bit.
Hmm. When we had you on the program for your last book, which was Voluntary Madness, some of our listeners will recall that was your journey through some pretty crazy places in our institutional madness system in this country. Do you want to talk at all about those other books and then go to this one, or do you want to talk about those later? There's some sort of a bridge that you crossed into this one from those.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you can see the pieces that are there from those books in a way that they were a kind of research, but I also think that pretty much my whole life was research for this book, in the sense that there are a lot of people that I know in it, or pieces of them that form parts of the characters. A lot of the things that happen in the book, believe it or not, have either happened to me or people that I know. And that's why I think when people say, you know, it's dark, or they say sometimes I didn't really believe it, I want to say, well, you know, you'd be surprised. So I do think, interestingly, I think one way in which this book is a little bit owes a tribute to the first book, Self-Made Man, is that in that book, as you may recall, I argued that one of the things I found in posing as a man was that I had greater latitude as a woman than as a man, and I had thought the opposite would be true. And I think what's interesting is what I found in this narrator is that the things I wanted him to say or be able to say, I couldn't believably put in the mouth of a woman. So in a way, it was kind of the opposite, which was surprising to me. But that is one of the reasons why I chose to make him male, because the kind of anger and bitterness I needed him to express really didn't seem to be... It didn't seem to work. I didn't seem to be able to do it without doing it from a male persona. So that's interesting. I also think, you know, the parts, the things that I learned in, you know, many of the psych wards that I went to are present here as well in terms of private struggle. I think there's a lot in here about people struggling in their own minds and that borderline between grief and madness. This is someone who's deranged by grief and looking for ways to distract himself from that grief by intruding on the lives of other people. So it's very much about the ways in which technology allows us to distract ourselves from our own derangement, possibly by grief, by all kinds of things, just the difficulty of living life. So I would say those are the two ways in which this book owes a debt to those two previous books.
Nora Vincent joins us. Her novel is Thy Neighbor. It's narrated by Nick Walsh. He's in his mid-30s. As you say, he's grieving. I don't want to litter our conversation with spoilers. This is like walking through a minefield.
I know, I do find it a little bit difficult because there are a lot of twists and turns in the book, and there's a lot to be revealed, and it is hard in some ways. I think it's safe enough to say that this is a book about the average things that happen in neighborhoods, in part, like divorce and, sadly to say, child abuse of some form or another. But it's also about the extremes of sometimes shockingly childish behavior. There's vandalism in the book, a particularly striking scene of it, which was in part me having some fun. But it was also again, this is not very far from things that I've come across in my life. And that in itself, I think one of the big things I wanted to do in this book in various ways is put you in an uncomfortable position. I wanted you to squirm, and I wanted to understand why all of us were squirming. I've done that again. I think that's another thing it has in common with the previous books, is I'm interested in the edges of things and what's culturally acceptable and what isn't and where that line is. And I enjoy stepping over it and seeing what happens. And often what happens is very unpleasant, but it's also very instructive. And I think the reactions to this book are already proving to be very much the same.
I would never accuse you of exercising restraint. Oh, what are some of the reactions that you're alluding to?
Well, first of all, everyone says exactly what you said. This is very dark, and I think most people don't read to be challenged or to be made uncomfortable, and they find that the darkness makes them pretty uncomfortable. And I also think that people have talked about, you know, Nick has a pretty foul mouth. Nick's pretty angry. He lets himself, or there are other characters who express things. I mean, people have said to me, his mother says a couple of things that are pretty astounding. She's an alcoholic, and she talks about she's an intellectual snob, and she talks about what she thinks the children of morons are meant for, or what she thinks that the United States is essentially a pile of idiots breeding more idiots, and other things that are just, as someone said to me, true, but no one would ever say them aloud, or let's say people would often agree in private that they think they're true, but they would never say them aloud. And again, those are things that people find that they can't shake, and they don't like that feeling. So I don't really expect that people are going to come to this and recommend it and say, you know, that was a lot of fun, because it's not fun. Nobody that I've seen, no reaction, has said, you know, gee, that was a great read.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think it is, in the sense that it moves along quite quickly, especially once the mystery begins to unfold. But I also think, I guess I like to read. I wrote the kind of book that I like to read, which is something that challenges you in language, gives you something to chew on. And the best responses I've had have said that, you know, that they didn't really care what happened to the characters because they were enjoying what I was doing with the language. So that was nice, and part of my intention, certainly.
I think it's a great read because it's shocking, yet there's something pleasurable about the shocks. There's something where you go, oh no, or you'll say, oh yeah, this is what's happening. I can't believe this is happening, but this is happening. And oh, there's three or four spots in the book where you make these crucial turns where something happens and you go, oh yeah, I saw that coming, but I cannot believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you give us some clues.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a total surprise, this can't be possible sort of thing. It's like, okay, we saw this coming, relentlessly coming, but we still are stunned.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole book is like that. And his mother is clearly someone with a classical foundation. She's read all the classics, and he likes to talk about the classics too. She's given him this grounding. He likes to talk about Shakespeare and Macbeth, and he's always mulling things around in his mind. His mind goes a million miles a minute, and he tries to kill his mind all through the book. He's trying to do something to just make his mind stop.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work though, does it?
No, and I think that's exactly it. His mind is he's hearing so many echoes of the past. And, you know, I think this is another thing you've hit on that makes people a little uncomfortable, or they don't really know what to do with it, because in a way it's neither fish nor fowl. It's not a classic thriller mystery, even though it has those components, because I do have it filled with poetry. And he communicates through poetry in many ways, or the recitation of poetry that his mother taught him. That's the backbone of the book. And I think that a lot of people may just sort of not really know what to do with that, or poetry isn't their thing, you know, and they may not be expecting that. And he really, but what he has to do, you're right, his mind is so relentless that he's had to start spying on his neighbors, because it's the only thing that he can find or has found in the previous 13 years that's a strong enough diversion to keep his mind somewhat quiet. And then, of course, that spirals out of control. The diversion becomes the central thing. But I think that's something I was interested in too, in terms of the culture, the ways in which television is getting more and more extreme. Films are getting more and more extreme, this just onslaught, and both in the content and the way in which they're delivered, the special effects and so on. And I think he's an illustration of that kind of mind trying to deafen itself to its own censure with technology.
The book is Thy Neighbor. Nora Vincent wrote it. We don't want to like him. He's rude, he's hateful, he's profane, he's shut down, he's angry, he's just angry, and we don't want to like him, but by the end of the book, it's kind of hard not to like him. And I think the one character who is totally sympathetic, in my view, is this little girl, the neighbor, and he and the little girl have this really unusual relationship, and I won't give anything away about it, but there's a point in the book near the end where they are at this place that they kind of share together. And this is a really beautiful transcendent moment. This is the one moment of any kind of blissful love in the entire book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a very sweet moment. It's like we've earned it.
Yeah.
We've gone through all the hatred and all the rage, and somehow there's this little safe area, this little sanctuary. Of course, it doesn't stay that long, but it's there.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that you felt that. And interestingly, I put that in at the very end. I inserted, I think it's okay to say there's a young girl named Miriam who's the daughter of one of his neighbors who's he's spying on. And he is worried about his relationship with her at first, because the way that the mystery presents itself, he's an alcoholic and he has amnesia, so he doesn't really know a lot of what he does on any given evening, and he's worried that he may have behaved inappropriately with this girl. And it turns out that that's not the case, and in fact, yeah, he's able to forge a relationship with her that's so unique, and I think must be among the most difficult, again, culturally speaking, for a man, a grown man, and a young girl who is not his daughter, to have a friendship that is not in any way obscene, that's creative, and that carves out this special place that's beautiful in, you know, amongst all the chaos that's going on around them. And you're right, it doesn't last, as these things never really do, but they do find something there for a moment.
The book is Thy Neighbor. Nora Vincent wrote it. How long ago did this begin to form?
Well, as I say, I think probably a very, very long time ago. Part of this is my own story. As you may remember, in Voluntary Madness, I talk a little bit about some of the things that happened to me as a child. And this, in a way, was me working through that in a fictional way, so that I allowed myself to extrapolate a little bit and to think about things that didn't actually happen to me, but that might have, or that I wanted to just emotionally go to the place of thinking, what if this had happened to me? And then examining what really did happen, finding the limits of that. And this is, you know, it's about abuse. And so in that sense, that's been with me for most of my life. And I think it's always been something that, in one form or another, I've tried to exorcise. I think it was there in Self-Made Man. I think it was there, obviously, in Voluntary Madness, and it's here in this. As I say, I think slightly different and better because I was able to play with the facts a little bit and experiment with, well, what if this happened instead, or how would this reaction have been if someone in my life had reacted this way rather than that way, and so on. And that was very useful to me.
And it's not a hopeful book, but it's not also a hopeless one either. When we get to the end, we say, you know, that was okay. That was not as painful as we feared.
Well, I'm glad you felt that way. I think that some of the best responses that I've had have said that it starts out really bad, and as you say, you don't like Nick, and he doesn't present his best side. He doesn't really want you to like him because he doesn't like himself, and yet he ekes out this tenderness that's in him, and these soft places, and this sensitivity, and this yearning for human contact as much as he spurns it. And I think that it was my hope that by the end you would feel both that you couldn't help loving him, because that is really what he wants from you, and that's why this whole book takes the form of his journal, and it's an apologia, really. And he wants you to love him. That's all along, that's really what he's saying. He's saying, I am awful in all these ways, but please love me. And I had hoped that that would be a possibility at the end, and that he would come to see that all the things he'd been through and been a part of and how nightmarish they were, that you could step away from that and you could say, as he does in the end, I'm going to go on, and I'm going to live my life, and I'm going to, and that he takes away a lesson about how to, sounds strange, but to be positive, to move forward rather than to stagnate.
To see what happens.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Mm,
yeah. And he's just like us. He wants to be loved. He's got his rough edges, but he's like every one of us. We all want that.
Exactly, and we often have strange ways of asking for love. Sometimes we're baldly saying, love me, which, of course, is not attractive in and of itself, but then other times we're doing all kinds of awful things, and we're still saying, but can't you love me?
Yeah. You got a very good blurb here from a writer who I happen to like. I've interviewed him for all of his books, Gary Steingart.
Mm-hmm.
And he writes good blurbs. He says, quote, Nora Vincent will make you laugh while she is breaking your heart and make you feel pity as you recoil in disgust. At once a misanthropic rant, a voyeuristic free-for-all, and a philosophic thriller. End quote. I think that really says it.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get a blurb from him? Did you know him?
You know, I didn't, and it's interesting because the whole blurb process is so unpleasant, and people are either far too busy and will only do it for their very best friends or people with whom they have special connections. You know, there are just all kinds of reasons why people don't do it, and he was the one person who had no problem at all. He just said, sure.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought it was so generous, and I'll always be grateful to him for that generosity, because it was so rare among other writers.
He's a sweet guy, and he's also very funny.
Yeah, he's extremely funny. Uh-huh. I still make jokes from his recent book, Super Sad True Love Story, and laugh at them because
yeah.
They're so funny.
That was a futuristic nightmare. And so was your book. In fact, after I finished reading your book, you'll never guess the first thing that I did. I went to Facebook and tried to see if you were on Facebook, and I couldn't find you.
That's really funny. Well, I was on and off Facebook. Literally, I think I have gone on and taken myself off Facebook probably 100 times.
Uh-huh.
And I think that I finally just said no because, oddly enough, you know, some of what Nick says about it and how much he hates it and the reasons why he hates it, it's groupiness and this kind of high schoolish mentality of popularity contests, which I have never won and never will win, makes you feel bad, you know, and the rejections that you usually get somewhere along the line. And then sometimes it's just the overload, information overload, you know, that I really don't want to hear about your toenails, you know. But I still, you know, I finally just had to say no, because it really was kind of painful to run up against all that, you know, here I am, look how many friends I have, aren't I lovable, likable, and, you know, it was unpleasant. And yet you do feel drawn to it, because it does give you the potential of reaching through time in a way, you know, finding people that you've lost in your life, which is what happens in the book, of course. It's a way of finding people and a way of communicating with people in a disembodied way, which has always been fascinating to me about the internet, that, you know, it's a way, it's the closest we've ever come yet to souls meeting in the ether, essentially. Mm. And I like that notion.
It's not a big part of the story, but I also was amused by the fact that his occupation is a freelance writer. We don't see him do it a whole lot of... I mean, he's writing the whole time, because he's obviously writing this story for someone, but this isn't the stuff that he does for a living. Yet he still gets that weekly check. I was impressed. Who the heck is this guy working for?
Yeah, I sort of pictured him working for, you know, I don't know, Penthouse, and writing those little, you know, sidebar pieces that pay really well. You know, something that you wouldn't want to admit to, but pays the bills. And I've known writers who've stooped that low just to, you know, write a little review or something for one of those magazines, and because they just pay exceptionally well. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's partly just because it's a life I know, and I know the solitude of it, and I know the gaps in it, and the ways in which I used to stay up all night and sleep much of the day. So that was also, you know, part of the flip that I wanted to achieve, is the fascination of the underside of the world. And you can do that when you work at home alone, and you work on your own schedule, and you can turn things in when you know, pretty much, let's say he talks about having monthly schedules. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to give him that freedom to be able to live on the opposite time schedule to everybody else, because that was part of the... And there's a conversation he actually has with his girlfriend about this, about how she lives her own strange life. And pulling back the cover on the world, you know, the shiny, polite plastic cover on the world, and looking at what's underneath, the night crawlers that are underneath.
Mm. Yeah, referring to her as a, quote, girlfriend, I mean, that's something that readers will need to look into more deeply, because they have their own conversation about that. And your title, Thy Neighbor, has a sort of a biblical ring to it. And we do spend a lot of time in this neighborhood, meeting the various neighbors, hearing about the neighborly relations over the years, seeing what the neighbors are doing. And this, is it Kruger?
Oh, Gruber.
Yeah, this guy. Ooh, where'd you think of this guy?
I mean, well, he is based in part on someone that I grew up near. Again, embellished, but not all that much. and that's true of a lot of these people. These people are often embellishments of, or pieces or amalgamations of, people that I knew when I was growing up.
How was it different for you, if it was different at all, to write fiction as opposed to what you've been doing before?
It was very different. Oddly enough, it came more quickly. I was able to write every day, which I usually wasn't. When I wrote my previous books, I would have sometimes month or two long periods where I just could not write. And partly I was doing the research, so I was out immersed in the life I was living. But in part, I think it was also that I just had this freedom to really let my characters do a lot of the talking, so that once I've established who they are, then a lot of what I did, which was a tremendous amount of fun, it really was about coaching my subconscious and encouraging my subconscious, because I realized it knew what it was doing, and that it would allow these characters to talk to each other. So sometimes I would just write out a conversation, and then I would fill in all the things around it. But it would just be me talking to myself as these people and letting them say what they would say. And that was a tremendous amount of fun and very satisfying and exciting. I think I've come to the conclusion that the old adage is not true, that that fiction is stranger than nonfiction. And I felt restricted by that when I wrote nonfiction, that I had to give people sometimes more credit than they deserved as real people because I had to make a story out of their lives. And in this case, I didn't have to do that.
Well, this guy, Nick, he's got a nasty mouth on him. The things he says, I sometimes had to go back and look again because did he really say that? That was so rude. And oh, my. So I know you don't talk that way. You just kind of imagined how he would talk, and you don't actually talk that way.
Well, if I said yes, would you be? No. I think, I think a lot of us talk that way to ourselves now and again when we're really in a terrible mood. I think that I could be wrong about that, but I think a lot of people, part of what makes you squirm is you think, I've thought some pretty awful things sometimes, and thankfully nobody can read my mind. So I did want to get at that, too, the commonality that we have with him, except that he's really just kind of let that come out, unchecked.
Yeah. Well, I see that you had the opportunity to work with Paul Slovak, who I think is just a fabulous editor, and I've really enjoyed his work over the years. What was that process like for you?
Oh, I love Paul. I really do. He's the best editorial experience I've ever had on any book with anyone. He is just the most gentle, wonderful, encouraging, intelligent, thoughtful person. He lets you do what you need to do, and he understands the sensitivity of creative people, and I just can't say enough good about him. I think he's so shrewd and pays so much attention, and as I said, is wonderfully sensitive.
There are a lot of readers who like reading stuff that's kind of dark, so I think you've got an audience out there.
Well, I certainly hope so, and I very much appreciate your time and thinking about this and really, putting yourself into it. Not very many people that I know have done as much, so thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Our guest has been Nora Vincent. The book is Thy Neighbor, and you heard about it on the Book Nook. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. Verlin Klinkenborg is one of my favorite writers. Tune in next week as we get some insights into how he does it. He's written a wonderful book about writing. It's called Several Short Sentences About Writing, Verlin Klinkenborg, in the Book Nook. Next week, right here on WYSO. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.